Also, the first progress report that you issued, according to Shakman, your office did not and will not, in future reports, opine on whether any, that he quoted, unlawful political discrimination has taken place in a hiring sequence, unquote. And Shakman wrote, your position is incorrect. He wrote, quote, the OCX simply cannot carry out the important duties set forth in the accord, recommended remedies and or sanctions as required in the court's March 30th, 2009 order, and certify compliance with the new hiring plan rules if the OCX is unwilling to investigate and opine on whether any Shakman violations have taken place.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering about your reaction to that statement.
Oh, a range of reactions. I'll first say that when we first started, and as we attempted to get, as when I first started and attempted to get a clearer idea of what our jurisdiction was, I was told that the Inspector General investigates political influence, i.e. a Shakman violation, and or allegations of political influence, and that we handle all process-related issues. And a process, a violation of a process under the hiring plan may result or may be indicative of a Shakman violation. So, for example, if someone doesn't properly go through the recruiting steps, that may be indicative of political influence, but it may also just be indicative of a sloppy, you know, someone carrying out their work in a sloppy manner. So we were comfortable with that definition early on, that if someone is alleging political influence from the beginning, that goes to the Inspector General. If someone's alleging that there's been a violation of the hiring plan process, that goes to us. And then at the point where we determine that the process was violated because there was political influence here, capital P, political influence, then we would refer it to the Inspector General. Now, given the past year and a half of working through it, the bright line has faded a little bit. So clearly, if there are allegations of political influence, that would still go to the Inspector General in the first instance, and employees are required to report that to his office. But the line has become a little bit more blurry in the process review, because we would still carry out our process review to completion. And instead of, if we, for example, determine that a process violation was the result of political influence, we would then meet with the Inspector General's office, let them know what our findings are, and then make a recommendation that we continue the process review prior to handing it over. But there, part of why we are going to meet with plaintiff's counsel is to get a better understanding, because we're sitting here operating under the guidelines that were established for this office. But it's my understanding now, after reading this document, that clearly he has a different view as to the scope and reach of what we should be doing in the context of not only Shakman violations, but potential violations or violations of the process that may lead to a Shakman violation.
In your third progress report, again, you talk about the give a couple examples of departments of overtime concentration, and you said that from May 08 to May 09, in Streets and Sand, 15% of employees received 46.5% of overtime. And you wrote, given the lack of documentation and internal controls within DSS, we were not able to verify whether DSS abnormal distribution patterns were simply the result of its failure to follow governing collective bargaining agreements, or whether there was some other wholly justifiable reason for the distribution pattern. Going forward, we will work with DSS leadership to implement control mechanisms to ensure a fair distribution of overtime hours. And I talked to Shakman yesterday about this, and he said that you should have found out why this stuff was happening. Here's his quote. He said, somebody's got to go in and ask, he went on to say, and not necessarily accept at face value everything that's being said. It seems to me that he's saying that you should have or should conduct an investigation, identify who's awarding the overtime, and ask them why. Do you think that's an appropriate function for the Office of Compliance?
Well, once again, we focused on the process. Based on our resources, based upon our skill set, I think what he is referring to is something that is better suited for the Inspector General's office to interview candidates to compare documentation. What we focused on is the process, whether the overtime was awarded in conjunction or in adhering to the collective bargaining agreement, whether there were other business justifications that would explain why a certain percentage of employees received a certain percentage of overtime, for example, whether employees had declined overtime, people more senior in the list had repeatedly declined overtime, which would lead to others further down the list getting more and more overtime. We can do some of that, but it would require that we went out and hired people with a different skill set. You know, the skills that we are developing are focused on analyzing processes and interviewing people to understand what their understanding of the process was and how they carried out the process, but not to determine whether someone's telling the truth, not to determine whether someone's, you know, trying to cover something up. And I think, once again, going back to his initial concern, Mr. Shackman's initial concern is, that's why it's important that our office works closely with the Inspector General, because they do have that skill set to be able to look at people, make determinations as to veracity, and in conjunction with our process review, you can get a more complete picture as to what's really going on.
I'm guessing that Shackman, if he were here, not that I can channel him, but might react to that by saying, well, then it's if you're not going to go and ask those questions, you're more concerned with the process, like you're saying, and not going to quiz an employee or a supervisor with the intent of finding out whether they're trying to game the system.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing that Shackman would say, well, then in that case, you perhaps should recognize that this is, we used to call in the Catholic Church, an approximate occasion of sin, you know, that this is a likely scenario of some kind of abuse going on, other than you know process ignorance or cognitive process negligence.
Mm-hmm.
There's some possibility that someone is trying to game the system, and I'm guessing that Shackman would say, "Well, then, since you've identified that this situation exists, then in your report, first of all, I want you, compliance, to go and bring in the inspector, like refer that to the Inspector General
mm-hmm.
immediately,
mm-hmm.
and say in your report, oh, this mm-hmm. is what we did. Well, how does that grab you?"
Well, we have provided the information to the Inspector General's office to look into what we've done and obviously make a determination as to whether they need to interview people in a more pointed and direct manner.
So you basically agree that's the way to go?
Well, I mean, unless we are going to go out and hire people who have that expertise to work in this department, we have to focus on where our skills lie. Otherwise, we're doing a disservice to employees as well as undermining the Inspector General's work, because they are the experts in those determinations. So I agree with the fact that that should be done. I would disagree that it necessarily needs to be done by us. I would agree that it needs to be done.
Along those same lines, Shackman maintains that when you've encountered employees who resist changing
mm-hmm.
unlawful practices, you should identify those individuals and remove
yeah.
them from their positions or otherwise sanction them. For example, in the specific case, as you've written about before, of human resources' ability to oversee employment actions,
mm-hmm.
Streets and Sands' refusal to implement your recommendations on the snow supervisor stuff, Shackman believes, it seems, that compliance should have identified the resisting individuals and made specific and very public recommendations around that stuff. What do you think of that?
Well, I think here I may not have been as clear as I could have been when I referred to resistance. When I referred to organizational resistance, of course, individuals comprise the organization, but when I refer to organizational resistance, I mean a kind of a questioning of the new regime, questioning why we have to do it this way. And that resistance might take the form of rescheduling a meeting two or three times, of not returning a phone call immediately, of asking questions which are obvious questions, which are not questions to seek to better understand the process, but questions just to be contentious, to delay the process of perceived understanding. So when I was referring to resistance, I wasn't saying that people are saying, walking around saying, I'm not going to follow the Shackman rules, I resist this. They're not doing that. People are a little bit more sophisticated than that. But you can also tell when people are resisting. For example, my kids, they're masterful. When they don't want to do something, they'll ask 100 questions. And in the end, at some point, you just have to say, well, no, just do it, and we can answer all your questions later. And that's what I meant, organizational resistance, the little ways that individuals within an organization don't say, I'm not going to follow that rule. But what they do is they find ways to try to frustrate you from imposing and monitoring the guidelines that they're established and that they are in place.
That sounds like Shackman is saying that you should publicly name those people.
So I'm going to, my concern with that is I don't want to put an employee's name in the paper for rescheduling meetings for a few weeks. I've seen the patterns before. I don't want to put employees' names in the paper or in our report for asking questions which I may perceive to be disingenuous questions, because they're asking questions and you want to encourage that. Yeah. Now, where people have violated the process, we have shared those names with the Inspector General. We've shared those names in our reports, which you alluded to may not be on my website yet, but in terms of putting everyone's name in the process that had a complaint about the new hiring plan, everyone who, we viewed as not being as open or not as accessible as we would have liked, The purpose here for us is to build relationships and work with people. And after a while, this level of organizational resistance subsides when people realize you're here to help them understand the rules and to comply with the rules. And you didn't necessarily write the rules. we're the IRS. We're not Congress. We just enforce the rules. And we just try to help you understand the rules better. So your resistance is, may be well placed. It may be justified. But this is where we are.
Got it.
And so, once again, I will clarify myself with Mr. Shackman when I have an opportunity to discuss that with him.
Shackman wrote this in his response that this goes to the nature of your reports. I'm sorry, he didn't write this. This is something he said to me. He says, quote, there is a tone in the reports that is that all is well, that everything is going swimmingly, and that the city is on the road to compliance. Maybe that's all well supported and justified, but you can't tell that in any way from what's in the report. And insofar as his reports, your reports, make forward-looking predictions, and they do in a number of places, that requires a crystal ball, which neither the Office of Compliance nor anyone else has. And this shifts the Office of Compliance away from being an accurate reporter and evaluator of conduct to an advocate for termination of further federal court oversight at some specific time in the future. And that's not appropriate. Do you agree or disagree?
I don't understand all of that. Let me just say a few things. Mr. Shackman is a plaintiff in this case. We have been brought in, and although we have very clear requirements to report and work with the federal monitor and the court, we are not plaintiffs in this case. Mr. Shackman has been involved in this case for a number of years. And I would like to point out that it hasn't been until the last approximately 8 months or so that the tone and tenor of the monitor's reports has begun to change to what we feel is more positive. And I think that's a direct result of compliance programming. Everyone else in the city has been here. We came 2 years ago, began to implement the programming. Mr. Shackman had been around, Mayor's Office, Department of Law, Inspector General's Office. Obviously, Mr. Hoffman came in, kind of upgraded what was occurring in the Inspector General's Office. But over the past 6 to 8 months, the monitor's reports have also reflected that there have been substantial strides, I believe is the phrase she used, in the city's efforts. So given we're at two different positions in this whole continuum of people moving towards the same goal, I believe we have the same goal in mind, I, by definition, have to take a different approach. I have to work with people who are going to authorize changes to the system. I don't have the luxury of sitting on the outside and repeatedly lobbying criticisms at the very management team that I've been brought in to be a part of to change. And so Mr. Shackman has that luxury. Mr. Shackman and I are working towards the same goal, but you know, I want to reiterate that he's been working towards this goal for a long time, and it has begun to become more of a reality as reflected, even if you look exclusively at the monitor's reports. It's becoming more of a reality based in large part upon what we've been able to do in the trenches.
To reiterate, what he said to me was that he thought that you were in several places in your reports saying that it looks like everything is on track, like the city is on a good track to compliance, to substantial compliance. And I think what he was objecting to was to you making those statements as opposed to saying this is what we have observed.
The monitor said the same thing. The bottom line is I'm writing a report. I'm writing a letter to the mayor. And that letter is filed with the court. If my goal or directive was to file a legal document, I would have engaged counsel, and the tone and tenor may have been different. May be different. I may have to do that in the end. But I see my role as elevating to the level of the mayor what is happening and what needs to happen, and where I need his support to achieve these objectives. And once again, with all due respect to Mr. Shackman, he's an incredible resource. He knows this case, this city, more than I ever will. And you know, he was unable, through litigation alone, to accomplish what we are accomplishing now. And once again, I want to give credit to litigators because it takes everyone working together. If it were only compliance and no litigation, probably wouldn't be as successful either. But I do want to point out I'm in a different position. I have to, and he also raised the issue of independence. And so I'm not sure if that's one of your questions, but I'll launch out into my discussion of independence.
Sure.
Having done this role, having been a compliance officer for an organization under federal and or state scrutiny for 15 years now, I have developed kind of a working definition of independence as well as an intuitive sense of when my independence is intact versus being challenged. From a definitional standpoint, I would argue that as a compliance professional, my role is to understand the operations, understand the legal, regulatory, and other requirements, and then help management understand how they can accomplish the operational objectives while staying true to the legal and regulatory requirements. That's what compliance professionals do, okay? I've done it before, and I think David Hoffman always said, and one of the most, I think, I don't want to say important, but one of the most, one of the things he said that stayed with me the most is, in this city, you have to be vigilant about your independence because it can be eroded in ways that you might not even be aware of until it's too late. And I respect that definition, and I believe, given that he was one, that he really upgraded the professional nature of the Inspector General's office, I believe there's some truth to that. But I think, given my experience over the last 15 years in a number of organizations, I've been able to develop and agree that I must be vigilant, but I've also been able to develop an intuitive sense as to when my independence is being challenged, when I'm asked to make decisions that I don't agree with, when I'm asked to consider different approaches which I may have already identified as problematic based upon the legal and regulatory requirements. And I would submit to Mr. Shackman that being contentious is not being independent. Being you know, adversarial is not being independent, being cantankerous is not, and that I can even say good morning to people and be independent. What's most important is understanding where the line is, because I do believe independence is about staying true to what's required, but also, as a compliance professional, being aware of and supportive in operationals, in the operational objectives. And as an inspector general, I think by definition, they are less concerned with the operational objective. Their concern is to root out corruption, fraud, misconduct. As a compliance professional and a process improvement professional, I have to necessarily be more attuned to what the operational objectives are and simultaneously be aware of what the legal requirements are. So I kind of feel there's a continuum of all of us working. There are plaintiffs that have the luxury of saying, well, you need to do X, Y, and Z. And I'm not in any way undermining Mr. Shachman. I believe he's creating a lasting legacy, and we're all working towards the same goal. Then there's David Hoffman, who's a little bit further, not David Hoffman, but the Inspector General's office, a little bit further on the continuum. And I am in perhaps the most precarious situation because I have to work within the structure, develop a modicum of respect, understand what the operational objectives are, and help management stay on the right road. And so I don't have the luxury of just being critical. I have to accept, I have to present my findings in a tone that will enable people to swallow, so to speak. Or I'm not effective. And I know compliance officers who are legalistic, and as a result, their answers are always no, and as a result, they can't really effectuate change. So it's a precarious situation. Over the last 15 years, I've been able to develop a certain level of comfort with knowing where the lines are, knowing what the operational objectives are, and devising or helping management devise strategies to do what they need to do within the parameters of what's required. But I agree with the former Inspector General. It does require a certain amount of vigilance, and but the best compliance professionals in the industry do it and do it well.